We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
We welcome everyone to today's professional learning. We are all learning through any time and uncertainty in our country. We salute you all for your courageous leadership, applaud your tenacity, and appreciate your dedication to providing the best learning experience for America's children. I'm Amy Sickle. I served as a superintendent in Abington, Pennsylvania for many years, and I'm a past president of AASA. I am deeply honored to welcome you on behalf of AASA, the School Superintendents Association. As partners in learning, we thank you for gathering today to help build understanding among all chief learners in our schools and districts. We know how difficult it is to navigate in these uncharted waters. We are all doing our best to navigate throughout 2020, and I'm hoping 2021 brings in a better year. We all need to grow and work together and learn from each other, and AASA has provided over 120 webinars since last March, and they can be found on aasa.org. This webinar series entitled Leading for Equity is intended to identify the practices, policies, and protocols that limit access and opportunity for children of color and low-income children. We all want to ensure that access and opportunity for students is impacted as little as possible, especially during this time, and we know that that's no small task. We know that children of color and low-income students are particularly impacted by remote learning challenges. We're highlighting today two educators who are advancing opportunities for learning despite these challenges. In our Leading for Equity seminars, we highlight leaders who are advancing equity with intentionality in an unusually inclusive model of engaging the entire community. It's my pleasure to moderate this discussion with Dr. Khalid Moumin, Superintendent of the Reading School District in Reading, PA, and Marlon Stiles, Superintendent of Middletown City Schools in Middletown, Ohio. Both superintendents will share their stories and what works in their district to make sure all students are well served. Khalid and Marlon will share what's working, as well as what might not be working, and what they've done to enhance their equity agendas. During this dialogue, they will move from excuses to implementing action-oriented strategies. The presentations will include examples of how to build community support and how to adopt an anti-racist model. So it's my pleasure to welcome you, Khalid Moumin, who is the proud superintendent of the Reading School District in Reading, Pennsylvania. He has been an educator for the last 20 years, to which I know him very well. We have a long history from the University of Pennsylvania, as well as working together as superintendent colleagues. Dr. Moumin, talk to us about your equity agenda in the Reading School District, please.
Thank you. First and foremost, when we're talking about equity, we know that leading for equity is extremely challenging. And this is a quote that I published in a book that I've just written called The Problem Child. But I think it's very poignant that this quote, you know, resonates with us as leaders. Too many times when change is a necessity in schools, administrators have come late to the table taking reactionary stances in an attempt to seek successful results. Now, same with equity. You know, when you're leading for equity, you have to remain that visionary. You have to remain being that calculated risk taker. You have to remain being that person or that leader who has the courage to make the tough decisions for the best interest of our students. It's all about hope, open advocacy, passionate action, and empathy. And as you start to really delve into this acronym of HOPE, open advocacy, passionate action, and empathy, this isn't simply good for, you know, kids growing up in an urban environment or urban setting or underserved communities. No, hope, open advocacy, passionate action, and empathy is good for all kids. Remember, equity encompasses all. So many times as leaders, and I'm talking about this from the 30,000 foot view, you know, immediately you'll have people who will say, well, equity, they'll mix equity and equality, which is a no-no. Those are two different concepts. Or equity gets penciled in as this is something that has to deal with race. No, equity encompasses all. So one of the best acronyms that we use in the Reading School District is RESPECTFUL. Religion and spirituality, economic class, sexual identity, psychological development, ethnic, racial identity, chronological age, trauma and threats to well-being, family structure, unique physical issues, language and location and residence. And the list can go on and on and on. Just to let you know that equity is forever changing. Equity encompasses all. As a superintendent of schools, one of the most powerful vehicles I have to move this equity agenda is my school board. My school board were the first adopters in regards to our equity professional development. In our retreat, they were able to come up with a equity and anti-racism resolution, which again, with district policy helps us as administrators and teachers and to be able to work within the guidelines under the policy, and it's an expectation for us all. As I move to the next slide, I'm going to pop back to this slide to somewhat solidify something. These are the action steps. In this slide, these are the action steps that come out of that policy. So let's look at number two. The Reading School District Board of Directors commits to its own work as individuals and our collective work overseeing the district and continuing to become equitable and anti-racist in core values, beliefs, behaviors, actions, practices, and policies. So as you move through these different areas, going down to number five and moving from planning to action as set forth in our Welcoming Schools resolution, and more recently in our equity policy, the Reading School District will stay dedicated to drawing on a perspective and feedback from the collection of diverse voices. Now, what that means is this, and I'm going to jump back. As you can see in this anti-racism and equity resolution, it's explicitly stated in the first paragraph, whereas the recent incidents of violence against Black Americans, including the murders of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, Rashad Brooks, highlight the systemic bias and institutional racism in our society that has senselessly and atrociously devastated so many Black lives throughout our country's history. The reason why I went forward is because this anti-racism and equity policy has to remain current, and these are the current signs of our times. So the board made that commitment to stay current and to stay actively pursuing a very seamless equity agenda within the Reading School District. When embarking on an equity platform or agenda as a leader, I will say that you have to have all of these components, whether it be your large school district like the Reading School District, where I'm fortunate to have an equity director. In smaller districts, perhaps this is an administrator on special assignment, or this work is delegated through, you know, building principals. There has to be an administrator that is able to spearhead all of the equity components. So the equity director, we have the school board workshops, equity PD for central office administrators. And what's key here is the one square in the middle, cultural competence PD for support staff. That is so important because you want to be able to bring along the entire school system, from support staff to teachers to administrators to school board to superintendent, etc. When looking at some of the action steps I mentioned earlier about the code of student conduct, how difficult of an activity this was to pull off. But this one book that has all of the behavioral expectations for every student in the district was one of the hardest to really revise and to make it something that will work in favor of our children and not being a document that's simply filled with punitive measures to how to address behaviors. So when looking at these equity components, you have the multi-tiered system of supports, looking at SEL and guidance lessons, virtual academy and accelerated learning academies to address, you know, non-traditional students and dropouts, students who are, you know, prospective dropouts, looking at special education and how to reorganize those services and things of that nature. But one of the keys here is this resource on the right in regards to equity visits. The equity visits have allowed for the professionals in the school district to be able to engage in the community with parents, with students, with partners, to further understand our children's needs and to further solidify our importance and our need to understand equity, to be able to lead students to infinite possibilities of success. And looking at the equity team members, again, this cannot be a fly-by-night initiative. This has to be an initiative that is sustainable. As we start to build the blocks from a leadership standpoint, and I talked about leading for equity, it's school board policy, it's the school board, it's the superintendent, and now we're down into the buildings with the principal, vice principal, the school counselors, lead teachers, and a parent liaison to be able to have this sustainable dialogue around equity for our children in the school district. And when you're talking about equity, racial and educational equity, it's quite simple. It's every leader, every decision, every day. Every leader, every decision, every day. Again, equity encompasses all. And when you're leading for equity, you have to have the courage to lead. You have to be a visionary. You have to be motivating. You have to ignite people with a sense of urgency and passion. You have to be inspiring. You know, we can do this, and supporting and sustaining them in this effort. This cannot be a fly-by-night initiative. It's forever ongoing.
Well, thank you so much, Khalid. Your words of wisdom, and I love hearing from you all the time. Good friend, glad to share Pennsylvania with you. Next, we're going to hear from Marlon Stiles, proud superintendent of the Middleton City Schools. And he has been there for a bunch of years because prior to that, he was the executive director. He's going to talk to you about what's going on in Middletown schools, and he's going to talk to you about Mitty Rising and his commitment with his district to equity. I introduce Marlon.
Thank you, Amy, and thank you, ASA, for continuing to support our public educators' efforts to drive and lead equity for all students in this country. Awfully humbled in the opportunity to be here. I'm in a tough situation right now. Khalid just covered some information that was very impressive. I was sitting here taking notes, and then all of a sudden he was done. So, Khalid, thank you for the words of wisdom. I appreciate the visionary approach you've taken from a district level. My hope today is that we can spend some time and really start digging into this about the action that we've taken as we started to really implement the vision that we've set forth. So truly appreciate Khalid setting the table here. Want to talk a little bit about hashtag Mitty Rising. This represents an equity-centered culture here in the Middletown City School District here in Southwest Ohio. And when you talk about empowerment and inspiring and igniting passion, we as a district truly have that feel in our culture, and the hashtag that you see here really drives that throughout our entire district. Just a little bit about our breakdown of our district. We're definitely urban, and we are awfully proud of it. And our equity-centered, equity-minded culture really supports the needs of our students, and we're hustling every day, awfully proud of our staff. As you can see, we are 100% free reduced lunch rate. really focus on meeting the needs of the diverse students that we serve. We consider ourselves lucky every day to be able to educate them. Our students look different. We absolutely love them. This picture tells it all. No graphic, but just some authentic visuals for you as you think about the conversation of equity. At the essence of who we serve are these young men that you see right here, and look at those smiles. Before we continue in the conversation, as you look at these young men, you can really see how excited they are to be inside the school. So as educators, if we are leading the equity work, I really want to challenge us to think about equity in this particular way at this particular moment in time. We need to be intentional. We need to be intentionally unequal if we want similar outcomes to be produced for our students, right? We want students to make it to graduation, to be successful for life when they walk across the stage. Leading equity means that we need to be intentionally unequal in our efforts to get students to the end of the game and make them successful upon graduation, meaning we can't give every single student the exact same experience and expect every single student to be successful when they graduate. So intentionally being unequal is really what equity is all about. As you look at this picture here, I want to take a moment and share a little bit of background. Again, actionable, equity-minded action steps is what we're all about. As we looked at our district about 3.5 years ago, we discovered that we had some really bad inequities that were present amongst our culture and our service model. We had unequal distribution of our technology devices that were already resource deprived for the students that we needed to serve. And that was a problem. So we said, shame on us. We started crafting a technology plan that brought equity for all students, not just in the short term, but in the long term. We're proud to say 3 years later, we've shifted our fiscal priorities, with equity being at the center of those priorities, aligning to our equity-minded outcomes. We now have a one-to-one environment for all students in our district, grades 1 through 12. We're excited about the opportunity here in the next several months to be a one-to-one district, grades K through 12 in an urban district. That's the easy part, right? To get the resources in the hands for our students. Our focus was on those equity-minded learning outcomes. So we have now started shifting to what do we have to do when our students leave the walls of our school buildings and continue the learning once they get home. As you know, the homework gap in this country is real and millions of students face it. We took it upon ourselves to tackle the challenge of knocking down the homework gap and the digital divide barriers that our students face on a daily basis. I want to share with you kind of how we went about doing that. Again, a quick 5 minute I'll make sure I do my math right. That's 6 months. A 6 month perspective on how we went about accomplishing this body of work to hashtag Connect Kids Now. Feel free to check the hashtag Connect Kids Now app movement, really trying to make sure we knock that homework gap down. We wanted to go from answering the traditional question that we feel is very inequitable. Oftentimes, as educators, we get the question, what percentage of your students are not connected to the internet? From an equity lens, we wanted to start being able to answer that question to say, we know the exact addresses of the students in our district who go home every day and don't have access to reliable internet service. So as you can see there in April, we worked with some service providers through the month of May to identify those addresses. And in June, we were able to say we knew every single household, the students that lived in that household, whether they needed internet access or not. As you can see, as we dug through the process, we made an equity investment in our students for the long term. This was not just for COVID. This was part of our equity-centered plan. We provided all of our students access to mobile hotspots for a two-year commitment. We are continuing those equity-minded rallies across the community. You heard Khalid speak about the importance of that. We have a community-wide campaign, even though we are a high-poverty area, for families to sponsor a child to have 12 months of internet access in their household. You may ask, what's the purpose? Well, the purpose is so when students leave the walls of our schools, they can continue their learning at a very high level. The purpose is so when students come into our classrooms, they have access to the resources that they need to be successful in the manners in which they want to be successful. If we want to intentionally personalize the experience in the classroom, we've got to ensure that we have resource equity throughout the district. So just a little bit example for you there. I want to shift to a different conversation as we talk about equity. As you see, the screen is black, but you see the font is white, 6%. In our district, we knew that we are serving in a very proud way, urban-minded students who come from a high poverty area and have a very extensive need, the diverse needs. We wanted to tackle those. We knew as educators, that first step is really shifting our belief as educators so that we could pay attention to what we needed to do to meet the needs of our students. So we wanted this figure right here to change, 6%. 6% of our staff body was diverse, meaning that 94% of our staff was white. You saw demographics earlier. We wanted to make sure that not only racially were we diverse as a staff, we wanted to make sure that we had racially diverse, urban-minded thinking in our staff to be able to meet the needs of our students. So I want to talk about what happened next, what we decided to do from an equity-centered standpoint are a couple things. Again, Khalid talked about the big visionary approach from the district level. Here's some actionable items that we've really been able to execute that have returned the investment for us, and we're seeing it in our student learning. First of all, we made a couple things mandatory. And you may cringe when you hear that word mandatory, but I go back to our equity-centered culture, hashtag MIDI Rising. We leaned on our culture. We required every single person, didn't matter your title or position, myself, every single Board of Education member, and anyone who got a paycheck from Middletown City School District went through two different activities throughout a two-year process. First, everyone was required, and they willingly and excitingly participated, went through a four-hour poverty simulation where we were able to experience what it's like to live in a household that is in extreme poverty. It was a four-week simulation done in a four-hour period, and it was highly, highly impactful. Our staff had phenomenal reflections, changed some practices, and really encouraged us to think about the opportunities we offer our students differently. Number two, the next year, every staff member, again, Board of Education members, myself, every single staff member, we went through bias training to order to change the 6% mentality that we have in order to meet the needs of our students. We wanted to make sure we were knocking down the biases that we had as individuals, as educators, and as a system. So this was very important. Once we got to that stage, as that process was being executed, we started really changing the game. We no longer accepted applications when we were hiring new employees. We no longer accepted resumes and just picked the best one in the stack and hired the best resume or the best person for the job. We started creating what we call our campaign to find urban-minded educators to meet the needs of our urban-minded students who live in an urban environment. We were very specific about what we were looking for. We engaged staff. We engaged administrators. We talked to candidates. We went to colleges to start picking the brains of different people along with our students to really come up with what we consider to be an urban-minded educator profile that we wanted to start bringing into our district. The staff that was already here, we are shaping our beliefs and our practices and our behaviors to be more equity-minded and urban-minded. We wanted to make sure our hiring practices spoke to what was at the heart of what we do, which is serving students in an urban environment. So as you look at what we were able to accomplish, and may have to squint a little bit, I don't have my glasses on, but as you look at this particular photo, you look at that image, the graphic image on the right, we were very intentional about what we were looking for. As you can see, there are some components of that urban-minded educator. We'll make sure we get this document accessible to you as a follow-up resource. There's some key things inside that document that really speak to what we were looking for as we started to dig into as we digged into the urban-minded educator. You'll see some specific terms that are being used. I won't spend all the time digging into what those are, but you'll be able to see that we're very intentional about what we were looking for. As we started to get more urban-minded educators into our district when opportunities presented themselves, now all of a sudden we are seeing our students maintain, not just create, but maintain amazing relationships with our educators. We're seeing culturally relevant practices inside our classrooms. Along with a staff who's gone through some different experiences, we're also seeing culturally responsive text being used in our ELA classrooms, so on and so forth. One of the teachers you see on this particular graphic right here, I'll go back so you can see her close up, Ms. Thomas here, our staff now are proposing with equity at the center of their thinking, proposing culturally relevant courses for our students to have access to. Just credit to Ms. Thomas here real fast and give her a shout out for the courage to do this. We now have an African-American literature pop culture course. Woo! An African-American literature pop culture course. This is real, it's authentic, and it is highly popular at our Middletown High School campus. So appreciate Ms. Thomas's courage for being able to bring that to the table. A few years later, right? Behaviors are changing. The equity agenda is active and it's been very intentional. As you see, this is 2.5 years into the process. That number has jumped from 6% to 13% diversity. But I would tell you, we are 100% urban minded. And that's probably the biggest celebration that we have in our entire district when it comes to this topic of equity. Our students have access to educators, adults that not only look like them, but adults that get them, and adults that are willing, at the core of who they are as a person, willing to provide them access to whatever they need to be successful. Pressing the wrong direction here. In addition to this, right, we want to continue down this path of leading with equity and taking action, right? Have the courage to do this kind of work. You can do it. You just got to put your mind to it and have the courage. What we decided to do is we wanted to continue to grow our own urban-minded educators. So what you see on the screen there, we have five paraprofessionals, some of which live in the community here in the city of Middletown, but they were employed here by the district in a paraprofessional role. What we decided to do is partner with a local institution. We created a partnership. It was a 2-year process. We provided a laptop, a partnership covered for tuition. And over those 2 years, our paraprofessionals, these five here, took courses online for free. They graduated after 2 years. They student taught in the district and they worked in the district at the exact same time. And we paid them during that time. They graduated with an intervention specialist license. They are now employed by the district, working in our classrooms, providing services for students with disabilities. So again, actionable items, going back to the original conversation that Khalid kicked off, equity at the center of what we are doing. So I return us back to what is most important, our kids. And we, if we are truly leading equity, we need to intentionally be unequal, right? Intentionally unequal with our leadership, with how we educate kids, if we want to produce similar outcomes in our students, which ultimately is for them to be successful when they walk across the stage. We've got to give them what they need, not what we want to give them. Give them what they need, how they need it, so they can be successful. So I'm excited for the question answer session. Khalid, thank you for the leadership. Thank you for all you do for kids. Amy, looking forward to some conversation with our guests and appreciate everyone joining us today.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it, Marlon. You spoke of cultural competencies and you provided some examples of how you do that in your district. How do you work on cultural competencies for both staff and students?
Yes, first and foremost, the cultural competence training happens in the beginning of the process, in the hiring process. It's supported by school board policy. In the community, it is a prerequisite and an expectation that everyone that we hire in the Reading School District must understand our kids and understand our community, understanding where they come from so that they can lead them to infinite possibilities of success in the educational system.
I know one of the questions in the chat was, can you define urban-minded? Urban-minded is about what your kids need, who live in an urban environment. The best answer I can give you is to sit down with your students, get a group of them together and ask them what they need. And then the culturally responsive, cultural pieces that you're looking for in the question you posed, Amy, you get your answers right there and what you need to provide your students. So we sat down with our Hispanic Latino community for the past 2 years and we just built a relationship where they can trust us. And they started talking about the resources that they need. And we've been able to respond and provide those resources. We've made additional staffing additions to our plan to be able to provide the supports the kids need. Is that additional translators across our district? No matter how resource deprived we may be financially, we made it a point to increase our translators in our district so our parents have supports. Another cultural piece that we really paid attention to, you know, our families need supports to be able to function at a very effective level as a family, as a household. So we have hired a total of 6 different community liaisons Their job is to partner with families out in the community to make sure that they are functioning in the way that they need to, so the student can be successful, not just in the home, but also in the school building. Those are resources that have potentially been put in place from listening to culturally what our urban families need and the educational system that we serve them under. Several other examples, but we've been very intentional about listening. I think that's the biggest piece of advice I could give you, and having the courage to respond to what the needs are, and then those answers to what culturally we need to provide or consider, we'll get those answers there. But I don't have a textbook answer for you. I'm not a read the research type person. I like what Khalid is saying, right? We're talking about authentically leading the people in the community that we serve. And the only way to authentically do that is to passionately listen to what they need.
That's beautiful, Marlon, and it really leads to the next question. Khalid, I think it was you, and I know, Marlon, you do this as well. It was asked how you codify this in a student's code of conduct to make sure that there is cultural competency and dealing with all students in an equitable manner. But to that, I'm going to add, how do you make sure staff do that as well?
I think, with looking at the resolution around safe schools and welcoming schools and anti-racism, it begins at the top. Whereas, you know, with school board policy, it's embedded in our hiring practices, and it's definitely an expectation for all employees. So it is in the training, again, started from the top down. So it's an expectation without no quorums whatsoever. The actual exercise of working through the student handbook, that was an exercise in cultural competence 101. Because we were able to pull back some of the layers of zero tolerance policies. We were able to talk about our demographics and how certain rules and expectations that we had in our code of conduct were antiquated and outdated, that had nothing to do with our students of today. We were able to really pull back some of the layers of, you know, what does this mean when a child is continually suspended and retained in the elementary grades? What is the longevity or the trajectory of this young person coming from this background and from this city? You know, we were able to make a lot of inferences in regards to cultural competence, and we learned a lot. We learned a lot from that process. It was probably the most difficult activity in this entire equity framework. Because, you know, with looking at the student handbook as being something that is a guide and being supportive and not necessarily punitive. Everything's punitive. You do this, you get this, you do this. No, it has to be a level of support and some understanding. And there are our kids have redeeming qualities. They are kids. But the data doesn't lie. When poor Black, brown, and white kids are continually suspended from school, they usually, without any type of supports to be able to bring them back to the fold, some counseling and things of that nature, it creates a pathway straight on to dropout. And we were dealing with a huge dropout issue here in the Reading School District. I will say, over the past 6 years, as I've been here superintendent, we have not expelled one student. There has been not one student expelled from the Reading School District. There has been programs and services that we've used to help children who were struggling, especially from a disciplinary standpoint, but not just tossed out in the street, because then there's no opportunity for education. We'll be continuing the cycle of poor kids being trapped on the pipeline of phenomenal data.
Marlon, do you want to add to that in regard to cultural competency and developing anti-racist skills for children and adults as well?
Yeah, I'll just say again, if you're not learning anything from Khalid, I'm not sure we're listening to, but I've got all kind of notes and I'm adding down, and I'm truly inspired. I'll say from our perspective, we have a similar philosophy. Why wait for behaviors to show, right? Let's understand what behavior is. If you're talking about leading equity, you want to dig into the conversation of behavior. Before we even talk about code of conduct, you've got to understand that when we as adults, when we see what we call behavior, bad behavior, students see that as you're not understanding how I'm trying to communicate with you or communicate with others. So I go back to intentionally what we've done here in our district to the training, right? Let's understand bias. Let's culturally understand families who live in poverty, so on and so forth. Be more understanding what our students need. What we've decided to do and is currently in action. Again, if our staff, I give them all the credit for the examples I'm about to share with you. What we decided to do is ask the questions. How can we get our students to fall in love with the schools that they attend and fall in love with the staff that provide them mentorship on a daily basis? So what you're finding is you're finding elementaries who started out several years ago having one or two after school clubs. They've got 10 or 12 after school clubs now. Kids are getting to school before it even starts in the elementary to participate in coding club with a teacher. They're staying after school to do dance club with a teacher. We've got robotics clubs. We also have made it a point to reach out to our community to establish community-based partnerships to provide programs for our students, both during the school day and outside of the school day. We've got some students who are staying at school till 6:30 at night, participating in after-school programs four nights a week with teachers, right? And some community members who are providing those after-school services. So I encourage us to get creative, to think about how we can better understand when students are communicating with us, encourage students to fall in love with our schools and our mentors in them, and prevent the behaviors from happening. At our high school, we've cut positions. We got rid of our dean of students, whose job is to wait for discipline to surface. Their first interaction is going to be to issue a consequence for that behavior. Well, we cut that position. We put in place a community liaison whose job is to work with students who are thinking about showing some signs of not being able to communicate with people and to provide a mentorship and a relationship with them where they meet with them on an ongoing basis to help them progress through the school system that they arrive to every single day. So we've been more proactive and culturally responsive in what we're doing for students versus focusing in on the actual discipline from that perspective.
Thank you both. And let's push this a little more. We've talked about how we're dealing with it internally within the schoolhouses, how we're dealing with it with students, how we're dealing it with staff. So let's go broader. Your schools and your districts are within communities. They're within families. So how do you push the equity agenda to both the families with which the children live and the communities with which the schools are within? Let's talk about going further. Either one. Take a big push.
Well,
you're both not shy. I know that.
Well, first and foremost, we have to continually get the heartbeat of the community. We installed, or we have positions called POAs. They're parent outreach assistants. Our parent outreach assistants, they're in every building. They're all bilingual, bicultural. They're able to give us major insight into the community where, of course, the language barriers are eliminated. That's one. Two, what we hear, especially when going to our community events and events with our partners, our community is very vocal. What they're looking for is how to access the system, especially with a lot of my learners. 26% of my students are coming from outside of the United States of America, and they've never seen buildings as big as ours. We have a high school that houses 6,000 students. So, you know, they're not used to seeing these types of educational facilities. So having that information and being on the ground in the community and bringing it back to the administration in regards to decision making is key. Now, what we found, and I'll tell a very quick story. One thing that my community and we learned very quickly, my community, they are very passionate about speaking out. However, you know, at times they feel as though their voices are not heard. Years ago, 2014, the Stoneman Douglas shootings in Florida, the young people at Stoneman Douglas had created a coalition They made it to CNN. They almost had that, made that leap to be able to have a say in some of the United States gun laws. And they organized a walkout for students, a 14-minute walkout for students. Now, I was in a meeting and that was the big to do. Oh, the kids walk out, they're going to be suspended or detentions and all this stuff. So one of my colleagues, and I happen to be the largest school district in Berks County here in Pennsylvania, we're the third largest in the state of Pennsylvania. And so Dr. Mamie, what are you going to do with your kids? I said, quite simple, from our equity agenda, we have our student leaders, our student leaders are going to meet with the building administrators. The building administrators are going to come back with a plan, reveal it to me. The kids will take advantage of the scheduling. They're going to walk out for 14 minutes, and then they're going to finish the day with the activities that they have planned. Quite simple. I said, as a leader of a school district of 18,000 kids who are 99% underserved, who am I to tell these kids in this community that they are not allowed to exercise voice when they will be fighting for the rest of their lives for their voices to be heard and to have a seat at the table? That's part of the equity agenda.
Yeah.
That's feeling the heartbeat of the community and the kids and advocating for them. Again, it's that hope, that open advocacy, passionate action, and empathy.
So well put. So well put. Marlon, please talk to us about how you push it out.
Yeah, Katie, I just saw your comment you posted in the chat, Katie, and I absolutely agree with you. That is pure leadership, inspirational leadership right there. To add just a couple other things to it, we have courage. Encourage anyone on the call today to have courage to lead your equity agenda. In education, we often find an excuse not to truly and authentically lead our equity agendas. Sometimes, I'm saying anyone on here, but sometimes we like to talk, but we don't like to walk. I would encourage you to have the courage to walk the talk. And as Amy shared in the beginning, take action-oriented things into play so your students can be successful. So that's number one, have the courage to lead your equity agenda. For us, just one example, I thought Khalid answered the question beautifully. We open the doors and we invite our community into the walls of our schools, and we walk outside of our school buildings and go interact with our community. I'll share two quick examples so we can take a few more questions. Number one, I run a quarterly, I call them key communicators. These are several individuals throughout the community that come in and sit on advisory council with me. We identify ourselves. Notice I said we identify ourselves as the most positive gossipers in the city of Middletown. These are folks that when you tell them something positive, they can't help but to go and tell 50 other people. So we share information about the district, but we also have deep dialogue about our priorities, our approaches, and what it is we want to accomplish. And then last but not least, instead of inviting the community in, we hold what we call MIDI XL events each year. It's the biggest showcase you could ever imagine. MIDIs from all walks of life come into our high school, middle school campus. It's the biggest equity showcase you could ever imagine. Our students, our community are interacting and showing off what's happening in our district all around the topic of equity and our positive equity-centered culture, hashtag MIDI Rising.
Ah, thank you, Marlon. That's another good example. Gonna push this just a little bit more. There's no question that the equity agenda is so crucial, but during this pandemic time, the equity agenda could potentially be compromised, like be compromised by the digital divide, be compromised by not only lack of hardware and lack of internet access, lack of help at home, lack of a parent figure there to really support the kids. So how, give us some really strong examples of how in your districts you conquered that, because I know you both worked so hard on making sure all children are continually being served during this very tumultuous time in our country. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Marlon. Don't let Khalid jump in first.
I would say, yes, there is definitely a threat that the historic inequities that have faced our children of color, specifically brown and black across this country for years, there's a threat that that could possibly continue in our educational system. But as I said before, let's stop talking, let's start doing. And let's start knocking down the systemic inequities that are present and have historically oppressed our students of color. We know for a fact that digital divide and the homework gap is real. So take action and have the courage to do it. What we're doing right now is we have signed a 2-year contract to provide our students at home with internet access for 2 years. And yes, that's when school is out. We're still paying for the internet. Our hope is that we can find a way to have the FCC provide us some cover to take our district server and be able to blanket the entire city of Middletown. So our students don't have to worry about being sponsored by a community member to have internet access at home. We're fiscally committed as a district to making sure they have the digital resources they need, both in the classroom and at home, to have access to the learning opportunities that they desperately want access to. We're trying to make sure that our resource deprived areas are being addressed. But I agree with you 1,000%. There is a threat. And if we allow, as an educational system, as a profession, allow those historic threats to continue to our most marginalized students, we have to own that. And I don't know about you, and I'm confident of every educator in this country, that we will look our students in the face and we'll deliver for them. But we have to have the courage to take action. As a Black male superintendent, yes, I absolutely get questions about the equity agenda. I absolutely get questions about leading a conversation around how we need to close barriers for Brown and Black students. I know some of our white counterparts, our superintendents, I know they get challenges about leading those same topics. I know we as educators, no matter what color skin we have, we're passionate about educating kids. And I hope we put those fears aside, find the courage, and we find a way to be brave enough to deliver for our kids.
Khalid.
So well stated. So well stated. And I will say that even though the pandemic has embarked upon us, the work of educating kids never stops. It's ever, it's forever changing. It's forever evolving. So one of the things that we did here in Reading, again, similar to Marlon, we said, without a doubt, you had to be a leader, you know, in regards to leadership, you have to be visionary and thinking of what is the worst that could happen. And I'm talking about back in March, where we had to shift to a digital platform or environment in like 14 days. We did okay to get through the end of the school year. But I said, if we have to start the new school year, the 2020 school year this way, we have to be 100 times better. So what did we do? We came back and we have internet access for all kids now. We worked on an agreement with Comcast, who owns all of the towers in the city of Reading. And every single kid in the city of Reading has home internet access. We were able to go one-to-one for every single student in the city of Reading. We also extended our signals within the guidelines of the FCC, extended the signals from our buildings, our 19 buildings, and one of the advantages of being in an urban setting, our buildings are neighborhood schools. So those signals, you could come up socially distanced, be on the property, and still get into the internet and on the platform, the technology platforms there. We created a map of the partners who have open signals, who were very welcoming for our kids to come and sit out in the courtyard and be able to engage in instruction. So I think from what Marlon said, he used the word very skillfully. It's courage. It is courage. Leadership is not for the faint-hearted. When you're in a sweet spot like I am, where I've had 6 years of school boards and they've changed 4 times, where I've had school board members who are committed to this equity agenda as much as I am, I'm in a sweet spot. Sure. If I am not talking about equity, they're going to say we need another superintendent because they know education is the pathway for our kids to have a chance. To make it in this ever-changing society. So you have to be doggish about closing the gaps of inequity, even during the midst of a pandemic. Also, it's a teachable moment because as you start to look at the pandemic data, the communities that are being impacted and affected the most look like my kids. And that becomes a teachable, that becomes another another lesson around cultural competence. And it keeps the flame alive. And you keep pushing and you keep pushing and you keep motivating your team to almost do the impossible. Without education, our kids don't have a thing to fall back on.
So well put. Well, we need to wrap up for this afternoon, but I'd like to say a couple of things in closing. What I most loved about today is superintendents and educational leaders really need to decide what's negotiable and what's not negotiable. Another way put is, what are you going to die on the sword for? And you got to make sure that the most important thing is you put kids first. And you have to have an agenda where excellence is through equity, or you're not going to put all kids through first. So I'm so glad that the two of you talked about that, shared your wisdom this afternoon. You are both special people and special superintendents who I personally know so well. So I commend you for what you're doing, and it's my pleasure to be here with you this afternoon. We thank you, everyone, for joining today's webinar on Leading with Equity. We thank Khalid Min and Marlon Stiles for bringing their words of wisdom to us. AASA and Leadership Network puts out lots of webinars, particularly this series on Leading Through Equity. We have two coming up, as you can see, on November 19th at 4 p.m., Data-Driven Equity Audits and District Protocols for Success. And then you can see on December the 3rd, but I note it's 10:30 a.m., The Hidden Bias of Good People, Implications for School Superintendents and the Students and Families They Serve. Two more great ones for you to tune in and be with us, or watch the recordings when you're done. I'm sure you thought these two individuals were terrific, but I'm biased about that. I hope this bias is okay. So thank you for joining us this afternoon. Have a great evening. What you do for America's children. Take care.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.